Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Nerds That Know interview edition, After Dark. It's not really after dark. It's like 2 in the afternoon. But we are doing interviews leading up to Denver Comic Con. And one of the big parts about Denver Comic Con is the costumers and cosplayers. And I am here with a woman who does both. Please welcome Suvi Couture to the show, everybody. She's waving, and obviously there's no applause because we don't have a live studio audience here. But Suvi met a few months ago, and we have been talking a lot about a lot of the costuming that she has been doing, and she's been doing costuming for, what, about 5 years now?
Cosplay, as you guys call it, I've been doing for about 5 years. I have been making costumes for 18.
Okay. That's awesome. And then what was your introduction originally to doing any type of costuming whatsoever?
I started making my own clothes about 18 years ago because, you know, when you're a poor goth kid, you can't really go to Hot Topic and buy your own stuff because it's really expensive and you don't have a job. So I just started making my own clothes. And then that kind of spawned into making historically accurate costumes. And then I was like, oh, hey, conventions, that's costumes.
And beyond making them for yourself, what was the appeal of doing them in general?
I kind of challenged myself to make bigger and better things and get better as a person. So I actively sought out bigger, better costumes with lights and armor and just essentially a way to challenge myself and make myself a better seamstress and a better costumer.
That's very cool. And then while you were doing this and then started doing it for other people, did you think or hope this would lead to doing costuming as much as you're doing? Because you said you do something, what, like 20 costumes a year now?
Yeah, I make about at least one costume a month. This year, I'm probably going to break that because I'm doing 3 costumes for Comic-Con this year, not just for me. But at first, I just made costumes for myself. It was only really after that people started seeing my work and seeing how detailed I get and pretty much the attention to detail that I have in every single one of my costumes that they started wanting me to make their own. And a lot of people actually will come up to me and see the detail in my costume and ask how I make it and if I can help them make their own. So I've actually... unbeknownst to me, I guess my reputation in the cosplay world is that I'm a helper. So I help people make their own costumes instead of me actually making their costumes for them, which I think it's a little better because then I'm helping somebody else do something to make themselves better instead of just doing it for them.
Exactly. And I think that would be appealing from a perspective of you knowing that you started off at a very basic level and you can show people some of the tips and tricks that you've learned along the way to make them into better costumers. And so they may leave you alone in the future and do their own stuff.
Well, they don't have to leave me alone.
No.
But,
no.
You know, I didn't have anybody when I was doing this to tell me what to do. By the time I had, you know, gotten past making my own clothes and started making historical accurate costumes, I had so far surpassed anybody in my family who has any ability to sew that they were just like, no, I can't help you. So this is all trial and error for me. And if I can help somebody go through that in less time with less frustration, I will.
Yeah. And so with the vast options of media and subculture, steampunk, future punk, period, and so many others, which do you like creating the most and why? And I will let my listeners know, she is, more period is what she started on, and I'm looking around her workspace / living room, and a lot of it is very influenced by period pieces, but are there certain ones that you like more than others, or that you have a lot more fun and creativity with doing?
Like I said, I started with the historically accurate period pieces. I do stray from it a few times. Like last year, my competition costume was the Daedric armor from Skyrim, made entirely from Bondo. That was super fun. I also take Disney characters, and usually more often than not, when I do the Disney characters, they have some sort of historical reference to them. For example, this year, my 3 good fairies from Sleeping Beauty are all Elizabethan-style dresses. They're not, like, the screen or the Disney screen-accurate dresses. So I took a little bit of liberty with that. I tend to go more towards the Tudor Elizabethan eras and the Victorian era. So those are like 500 years apart, but you know, that's typically where I land, mostly because they're super challenging to make.
Yeah, well, I can imagine there's so much detail that goes into a lot of the crest pieces and even the sleeves. I see what you were working on for Philip over here. I mean, even just the little details and the hats and whatnot. It just has so much going on with it, so.
Yeah, one of the first dresses I made for the Ren Fair, I think I made it like 10-ish years ago, has 14 pieces to it. It's huge. It's I've dubbed it my Elizabeth Bathory dress.
Mm-hmm.
It's the rough collar has little blood drops that come off of it as little rhinestones. But that piece was made to Elizabethan costuming standards. There really isn't a costuming standard. I just pulled a bunch of stuff out of a book and hoped that it worked. And that was a lot of trial and error and a lot of thrown away fabric. Because I messed up so many times on that. But it has, the sleeves are removable. So you can actually interchange the sleeves. The sleeves were supposed to be tied into the inside of the sleeves of the dress. There are usually four skirts and whatever you're wearing underneath all of those. So the partlet and the smock and everything. So there's a ton of stuff that goes into those.
What's the frame called that makes it stick out?
Petticoat or a farthingale.
A farthingale, yeah. And it's usually like, back in the day it was more like an iron frame, right?
Back then they were using whalebone or they were using reeds or things that we don't have access to anymore because they're unethical. A lot of the corsets were made with whalebone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, obviously we can't do that anymore. But now mine are made from metal. I made an attempt at one and it was awful. I have to redo it. So those are really the only thing that I buy is those petticoats, but they're so cheap to buy now. It's like $40 for one of these skirts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just easier to buy and you don't have to mess around with it or get the measurements correct. And I applaud the people who make those by themselves because there's a lot of math involved in those. There's a lot of geometry and to get it perfect, it takes a lot.
Well, going along with that and buying, you know, framework and stuff like that, and this is the question I hadn't intended on asking, but just because I'm curious about it, when you enter the competition like you are for Denver Comic Con with your costuming, what percentage of it is allowed to be prefab and what has to come directly from your own two hands?
So they don't actually, at least this year, previous years and other competitions, they've said you have to make X amount or X percent. They weren't really defining that at Comic-Con this year, which I thought was a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
But the general percentage is usually, I think you can have up to 75% of your costume for the novice bought. So 25% of your costume is made by you.
Mm-hmm.
And then an intermediate, they expect you to have at least half of your costume made by you. And if you're in the advanced or master classes, you have to have a minimum of like 75 to 90% of the costume made by you. And that includes stuff like wigs and shoes and,
oh, wow,
and gloves. And it gets really, when you get up into the advanced and master classes, they get really, really finite.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just buy a generic wig and you do nothing with it, that's considered something that you bought. However, if you buy a wig and you sew wefts into it or you put lights into it or you do something more with the wig than just...
Color it, braid it, whatever.
Yeah, color it, braid it, you know, do weird stuff with it, style it, that's not considered buying it anymore because you took something and made it your own.
Gotcha.
So for my costumes, I would... This year I'm competing in intermediate. I view myself as a little bit less than maybe what people would see my stuff as. So I'm actually competing in intermediate this year and I made every single piece on these. The only thing I bought were the petticoats and the shoes.
That's super impressive. And like looking around, I've been able to see over the last couple weeks the progression of what you've been doing by hanging out and seeing pictures, and it really is incredible the raw material taken and the work that you've put into it, because I know you put a lot of work into it. And you were saying, I was asking you out of curiosity, how did these judges know that you just didn't buy this? And it's a pretty rigorous process for you to, like, you know, in math class where you had to show your work. She's just got pages and stacks of stuff of each stage and pictures. So it's a pretty intense process to make sure that not a lot of people are just entering these competitions and just buying their stuff and doing minute things to their costumes.
Well, the other thing is when you submit your paperwork, really, to be is as part of the costume competition, they ask you, one of the questions is, what did you buy? And at that point, you're supposed to say, okay, so I bought shoes, I bought a petticoat, I bought, a wig or gloves or whatever your accessories are. But if you bought it and then turned it into something else, like you transformed a wig into, you sewed wefts into it and you styled it, that's no longer a bought piece.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that it's like taking fabric. You technically bought the fabric, but you took the fabric and formed it into something else.
Gotcha.
So you have to tell the judges that. And then when you come into the craftsmanship judging, the judge will actually pick your costumes up and they'll flip the seams so they can actually see for themselves what you bought and what you didn't buy.
It's intense. Another question I had that's not on our pre-list was, how often do you continue to still use muslin to do your pre-materials before diving right into the actual nice material?
Pretty much every costume I make a muslin copy of first. Mm-hmm. Because I don't, some of this fabric, like the stuff for Prince Philip's jerkin, this stuff cost $25 a yard. I had to buy 10 yards of it.
She's shaking a big piece of velvet at me right now.
Yes, it's it's expensive, so you don't want to mess up your fabric and have to start over and over and over again. So when I made the jerkin for Prince Philip, I did not buy a prefabricated costume that you could essentially cut out from like Berta or Simplicity or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I got it out of a book. I drafted the pattern. I measured everything. I set it all out on regular computer paper before I cut it out in the muslin. And if I had cut that out in the velvet first, I would have been remaking that about 3 or 4 times, because the costume in the book, or the jerkin in the book, was actually made for somebody with a 37-inch chest, and Philip has a 40-inch chest.
Oh, wow.
So I had to add in extra panels. I had to add, I think I added about 4 inches to the jerkin to allow for it to be put over the shirt that it's on. And for the wearer to be comfortable, because I don't want to force somebody to wear something skin tight if they're not used to wearing it.
Exactly.
And you know that some of this is linen is really hot, especially when it's under velvet. So I don't want to have all this bunched fabric together and then for them to be really hot and then not enjoy themselves.
Exactly. So no, it's a lot of these processes, people don't think about exactly what goes into it. And And I just know this because an ex of mine years ago did costuming. Muslin is essentially just a blank linen material that you do your first copy on to see how everything's going to fit together before you start getting into the satins and the silks and the linens and the other stuff. What's that stuff called? Velvet.
Yeah, the red is actually satin.
Satin. So.
So I've got the flora is satin with crystal organza. The Aurora dress is taffeta with metallic detailing within the fabric.
Mm.
Philip is crepe back satin and linen and velvet.
You could be making all of this up and I wouldn't know the difference. But no, it's definitely a lot of material. And like when people do things like this, and luckily you're able to start making a little bit of money from a lot of your commissions, but costumers, they put a lot of money into it for not a lot of return except for just looking awesome. So if you see anybody who has a pretty sweet costume that they made themselves, make sure you give them a pat on the back, because it is a lot of work and it can be quite expensive sometimes. Yeah. Another question I'd like to ask you is, how often are you given artistic license by the people who commission you?
I pretty much get free reign of the costumes that I get commissioned. I'm actually making some sort of anime character. I don't delve into anime, so I don't really know the character, aside from the fact that she is wearing pretty much almost a traditional kimono. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to make kimonos. I just don't have the time. And again, that's something else that I would probably want to do historically accurate. So I would be here for days upon months upon years hand sewing those, because traditional Japanese kimonos are not sewn by machine. They're sewn by hand.
Of course.
Every single seam. Yeah. And there is actually no curves cut into those. Those are actually straight pieces of fabric.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. It's just one long piece of material that gets wrapped around, and then that's how you have your neckline and everything.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
Traditionally 18-inch wide silk.
Whew.
Yeah, that's hand-painted.
Yeah.
So that's something I would eventually like to do as a challenge, to say, okay, I hand painted this silk and then I hand sewed this kimono and the obi and everything else. So it's something on my list, but it's not just something that I'm going to do for a commission, because in order to do that for a commission, I would be charging several thousand dollars for that. And not a lot of people have that kind of money.
It's like a Hattori Hanzo sword. Like, you can have it in about a year.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something that would take a long time. It would take a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But I, back to your question, though, I am usually given free reign with my costumes. Even my commissions, like the lady that I have that I do, I alter her suits. And she's just like, you know, whatever you want, whatever you think looks good, you're the expert. So even for alterations, I'm given, you know, free rein on what to do with the client's stuff. The only thing I do that I don't know if a lot of people do or not, is I make sure that any crazy idea I have is okay with the client before I just go doing it. So
yeah.
I'm not going to take your money and your fabric and just do what I want because it's what I want. I'm going to do what I think would look cool as long as you're okay with it. Because if you're not okay with it, I'm not going to hand you something you don't like.
Yeah. As much as you'd like to sometimes. I'm sure it's like, oh, this would be so cool. They're not
going
to like it, though.
Sometimes people aren't aware of what, like when I had some brides, when I was doing wedding dress alterations, I would have to really convince some people, because of body shape or the way that it would look, something that would be flattering on you is not necessarily what you want.
Yeah.
You know, if you have the wrong body shape, certain dresses like mermaids are not going to look good on you. You know, if you're a really short person and you wanted a T-length dress, it's going to kind of make you look a little shorter. You want to go at the knee or higher. T-length is mid-shin,
mm-hmm.
So it would look like you're wearing high waters.
So, yeah, sometimes people don't understand that, but it's nice for you to be able to be in a position where people can trust your judgment most of the time, and it's going to feel pretty good. It's like, yeah, they know that I know what I'm doing, and that's why they hired me. So, so I know we already talked about you doing period pieces, but when you do a costume for yourself, what are some of your inspirations? Besides the Victorian and the Tudor style, what media really do you like where you'll see something and you're like, oh, I really would like to try that?
I actually have a Facebook album, really, that's just an amalgamation of all the costumes that I would like to do someday. It really spans, like, a vast majority of media. I've got three or four costumes in there from Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Blue Kitties, the last Airbender Avatar, because that's the only one that really matters. And we don't talk about the movie.
No.
M. Night Shyamalan is the Ember Island players playing at being Avatar.
I never even saw the movie just because I heard it was...
Yeah, no.
Yeah, not worth it.
If you go into it thinking that it's the Ember Island players,
mm-hmm.
the movie makes so much more sense.
Fair enough.
But I have a lot of stuff in there. I've even drawn inspiration from some of the tabletop games, like Warcraft.
Oh, wow.
Not Warcraft. Warhammer 40K.
Oh, yes, it is.
So the Sisters of Battle
okay.
is one of the costumes that I have on my list, with the big angelic wings and the halos and everything. And that's a challenge right there, because the last set of wings I built took me forever, because I hand-stitched each one of those feathers in one by one, but they were not articulated, so they didn't move.
Oh, is that the one you showed me
yeah.
last week? Oh, yes. Yeah. That is intense.
So it's on my list because it's a challenge to make those articulated wings,
mm-hmm.
and I've never made them, so I want to make them.
Very cool. And then, so you mentioned your Facebook page of and albums of stuff that you would like to do. Where can people who would maybe want to hire you or just see your stuff find you? Do you have an Instagram?
I have an Instagram. It's SuviCouture21.
All right.
I have a Facebook page. It's just SuviCouture. I have Patreon if you guys want to give me money to do things.
Which is always nice.
Yeah.
Please support her Patreon.
Yes.
She needs more, and she does way too much good stuff to not get paid well for it.
Patreon is actually where I put all of my tutorials. So I actually had a couple of weeks ago, I altered one of the dresses for myself for something. I don't know. It's a formal dress. It's a prom dress that I snagged for way less than it should have been. But it was a heavily beaded dress from top to bottom. And not a lot of people know how to alter dresses with beads on them, and especially glass beads.
Mm.
You got to be really careful when you pull those off, because they're chain beaded. If you clip them, the whole row goes. And hand stitching that one on by hand is not fun. So I did a tutorial on how to alter dresses of that nature where they have beads or they have no back. That particular dress is backless.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, if you want tutorials, my Patreon page is the place to find those.
Very cool. And unfortunately, she is booked up through DCC with all these great costumes that she's doing, but doesn't mean you shouldn't reach out and see what she can do for you. And then I guess that kind of brings us to wrapping up. And the last question, which I know you have some thoughts about, is what are your thoughts on how DCC has evolved, changed, and adapted since you've been attending?
So initially, when I started going to DCC 5 years ago, it was really great. I had a great time. There were a lot of great people there. The costumes were really great. People were allowed to bring in, you know, within reason. There weren't as many restrictions. It was always great seeing the 501st and all of their stormtroopers with the guns that miss everything. And, you know, stormtroopers.
Like stormtroopers
do. Yeah. So, but the last few years, I think it's really, really gone downhill. And this isn't really like a criticism of DCC and pop culture classroom so much as it's a criticism of the people who run the costuming and the cosplay sections. So they're two different things. DCC is pretty much run by pop culture classroom. And I think what they're doing for kids and getting people into these programs is really great. Getting people to read, getting people to draw, doing art, that's great.
Absolutely.
The cosplay section, I feel, is what's suffering right now. I feel that DCC is kind of going away from having costumers in general. They don't really feel that cosplay is a really big part of it anymore, and I think that they're losing a lot of people because of that. I know last year, when the really strict costume requirements came out, a lot of their attendance suffered.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think 2 years ago, there was 105,000 people that came through. Last year, I think barely broke 100,000. So there were at least 5,000 people that just said, screw this, last year. And I know for a fact that there are even more this year, because they made the requirements to get in a lot more strict. And the costume requirements they're starting to get really, in my opinion, I think they're starting to get really petty. You can't bring in a wooden umbrella or a wooden parasol. It is not allowed. It has to be plastic.
Really?
Yeah. So all the Firefly people that are going to be there this year, Alan Tudyk, I believe Kaylee might be there this year. I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm. But
because we, my ex and I, we dressed up as Kaylee and Matt last year, and she had her wooden parasol.
Yeah.
And they're, now they're not going to allow that this year.
No wooden parasols. It must be plastic. Same thing with the lightsabers. You cannot have any wooden or metal lightsabers. It must be entirely plastic. So that throws out all of the screen accurate Rebel Legion standard lightsabers, which is going to piss off a lot of people. And essentially, if your costume has any metal on it, in it, or near it, they're not going to let you in. And what I thought actually this year specifically when I read the rules was, they specifically called out, if you can intentionally hit somebody with it, you will not be allowed in with it. And my response to that is, I can intentionally hit somebody with my face.
With anything.
Are you going to let me in? Because my face is kind of attached to my body.
No fists or feet. You will have to crawl on your stomach because it is getting a little bit intense with the rules. And I understand some aspect of it, especially with the pop culture classroom, wanting to get younger generations involved.
Yeah.
And understanding that some parents have some delicate sensibilities about what they are wanting to expose their children to and not really having much of a choice about it. But also, Comic-Con is meant for people who are intensely into the books and the comics and especially the cosplay, and being able to regulate what people want to dress up as and not having it be accurate to the source material is really unfortunate. I think they're going to see that, especially this year, as they did last year with the drop in attendance. So
yeah, and on top of that, like last year they had the half of the convention shut off. I heard multiple reasons for this. One of them was they couldn't monitor all the doors, and they wanted to make sure that after the Phoenix Comic Con fiasco, that they were able to make sure that the patrons and the con goers were really safe. And while I understand that you can manage multiple doors and multiple entry points, you just have to have the staff to do it. And they hired Argus last year. They had the staff to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they still shut off the front entrance of the con. And that had twofold. Like, the Blue Bear, everybody knows where the Blue Bear is.
Mm-hmm.
If you get lost, you get separated, you're meeting somebody, meet me outside by the Blue Bear. I'll be under the Blue Bear. I'll be near the Blue Bear. Everybody knows where it is, so you can easily find the people that you're meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you get lost, you get separated. They didn't have that last year. You could not get near the Blue Bear at all. The lobby where the Blue Bear is has a lot of really good sunlight, and it's a really good area for photos of really big costumes that you can't really bring into the halls. And they weren't allowing anybody even remotely in the lobby. And they said that they couldn't keep all the doors closed. They couldn't secure the doors. And then there was the infamous double booking that canceled last second. And even though it had canceled last second, they still didn't allow anybody over there. It's just, and then on top of poor management of how they're handling things, how they're handling the convention center, poor communication, especially in the cosplay. Because last year when I was in the cosplay competition, they had no idea what they were doing. Nobody knew what the other person was doing. They didn't have a walkie-talkie system. They were running back and forth. Like, it was poor communication on top of poor communication. And I'm kind of seeing that start this year.
Yeah.
It's not a good sign, especially with the lottery. They couldn't fill it up. Like, I'm not holding out hope. I mean, hopefully, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be a really great year. And maybe I'm just being, you know, cynical and skeptical. But between that and the really strict costume and prop cut policy, I think it was really difficult to enforce, or the staff is just thinking that, you know, certain people are allowed in because they feel that this is how they interpret the rules. I don't know, like...
Or they like this person wearing this costume because they had some type of bias because it was a more petite girl wearing an outfit as opposed to, you know, a bigger girl who had the same outfit on, and there was some bias that went on there because they were afraid that that would be more offensive, which is really unfortunate because, as we were discussing earlier, Comic-Cons are one place where people who are into that subculture can go and feel comfortable around every aspect of it. And them not figuring out the best way to handle the situation is an unfortunate circumstance.
Yeah, I know last year when I was waiting in line, I had a couple of Poison Ivies. And we all know that Poison Ivy is a pretty popular costume for girls to wear. It and Harley Quinn, or, you know, I see myriads of them. I play Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy bingo, you know, like whoever gets the first, you know, in a row or something.
Yeah, we did that last year too.
So, you know, there were two Poison Ivies in line, and one in front of me, one behind me. And the girl in front of me was a heavier set girl, and she wore an overbust corset that was completely covering. It didn't show any skin. So essentially from like the chest up, she had, her shoulders were bare, but that was it. She was wearing an overbust corset that she had glued a whole bunch of leaves on. She was wearing a pair of short shorts and a pair of opaque green tights. So she wasn't showing any skin from, you know, like I said, the chest down. She was pretty covered. And the staff had stopped her and said, "Your costume doesn't meet our standards." And she's like, "How does this not meet standards?" And they're like, "Well, your costume is too revealing." So they were trying to make her leave. And two or three people behind me, there was another Poison Ivy who was essentially wearing a bikini.
Yeah.
She had, I think she actually took a bikini and just glued some leaves on it and wore it. And was wearing a pair of high-heeled shoes or boots or something. And they let her right in because she was, she was smaller than me. She had to have been right around 100 pounds. Like, she was maybe dripping wet. She was really tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And they let her right in. And I was like, she does not meet the costume standards. If you're going to pick on her for not meeting the costume standards, why did you let this girl in?
Yeah.
To be honest, you should have let this girl in the corset in. Her costume, I feel, is much, much more thought out, much better. And this girl in the bikini that just glued a couple leaves on, that's not cosplay.
No.
That is a bikini with some leaves glued on it. And you should have told her to go home and put some more clothes on. And a couple years ago, I know this was also an issue where they were picking on men to women. So there were a couple of girls that had a bit more revealing costumes on that were not allowed in. And specifically a girl who had, I think it was a bat symbol on her chest. She didn't meet the guidelines, but essentially she had like the bat symbol on her chest, and it had been glued on there, I guess, pretty well. So I think she did a couple of interviews after it, but she was asked to leave. And I felt kind of bad for her because while she wasn't entirely meeting the standards, that thing was not coming off.
Yeah.
But there were two guys that were wandering around the convention in essentially Speedos. They were male Gajinka versions, I think, of Pikachu. And they were walking around in yellow Speedos with little ears, like, on a headband. And I'm like, you let them in, but you didn't let the girl in. Like, what's wrong with you guys?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there definitely should. And hopefully, hopefully this year, but within the next couple of years, they'll bring in some people who are a lot more familiar with exactly how costumes are supposed to work, especially for accuracy, and maybe change their policies a little bit on that. But
yeah.
Either way, DC She, it is what it is every year, and it's fun, and the costumes hopefully will be fantastic as they always are this year. What night is the costume contest for you?
It's Saturday the 16th.
Saturday the 16th, so.
7 to 10, I think, is the official. 7 to 10 or 7 to 11.
So if you've never been to one, these men and women put a ton of work and a ton of effort and a ton of thought into their costumes. So please do yourself a favor and get to the costume contest to see some really great craftsmanship and to cheer on Suvi here when she enters her intermediate costumes, which as far as I can see are looking pretty fantastic. So Suvi, oh, go ahead.
There's a surprise in Aurora that I haven't revealed to anybody.
And I almost said it, but since you didn't say it, I didn't want to reveal it either. So, but it is actually a really dope surprise. So, so Suvi, thank you so much for your time today. We will see you at DCC this year, and make sure you, if you see her at the con, go up to her, introduce yourself, ask her about some costuming stuff, and you know, just tell her you appreciate all the hard work she's been doing, and all the costumers for that matter, because they all really do deserve it.
Yeah, I'm not going to be the only one there. Come on.
No, but I'm biased because I know you. But yeah, We hope to see you guys at DCC. And on this week's show, we'll also be talking about Deadpool 2. So stay tuned for that. And we will see you on Tuesday.